I'm Dan Hughes in the Old Time Radio Corner. Jack Webb is best known, of course, for Dragnet. Dig a little deeper and you'll find Pete Kelly's Blues, Pat Novak, and Johnny Madero. But have you heard of One Out of Seven? Jack Webb was the narrator and all of the character voices. The program ran in 1946, but only on the ABC stations on the West Coast. It was a news program that took a strong stand against racial prejudice. The title refers to one story to be told from the past week, or past 7 days, one out of seven. Though Jack Webb professed to being neutral in these stories, there was no doubt as to where he stood when it came to racial hatred. I think you'll find these shows fascinating, and you may reflect upon how much different we are now from how attitudes were almost 70 years ago. Because the programs ran just 15 minutes, you'll hear two of them, back to back. The first is from February 6, 1946, and it consists of quotes of Mississippi Senator Theodore Bilbo. The second, from 2 weeks later, February 27, 1946, contrasts the ideals of Brotherhood Week with the reality of real life. And now, here's Jack Webb and One Out of Seven.
Ladies and gentlemen, the material and direct quotations included in the following program have been taken from authoritative files and from dispatches filed by the Associated Press and International News Service. We present these statements without editorial comment. We assume no responsibility for their content.
The American Broadcasting Company presents One Out of Seven. Make a day. 7 days make 1 week. And from these past 7 days, the editors here in our San Francisco newsroom have chosen the one story which they have judged most worthy of retelling. This is One Out of Seven.
Theodore Gilmore Bilbo is an honorable man. As a member of the United States Senate, he is looked upon as such by the eyes of the law. Perhaps he is looked upon as such by many or most of his constituents. Though his voice occasionally grate upon the nerves, and his views often confound the innocent, the fact remains, as a member of the Senate of the United States, Theodore Gilmore Bilbo is an honorable man, and we do not intend to prove otherwise. We merely wish to cite a few samples of his handiwork, and perhaps a supplementary side glance or two, just for the sake of contrast. Adjust your dials most carefully, citizens. Herewith presenting Senator Theodore Bilbo, picture number one. Scene. The Chamber of the Mississippi State Legislature. Time, March 23rd, 1944. The Speaker.
The Chair recognizes our distinguished guest, the Honorable Theodore Bilbo, United States Senator from the state of Mississippi. Gentlemen. At this moment, I cannot urge you too strongly to continue the valiant fight to uphold our racial integrity. We must renew our faith and allegiance to the color line. For your information, I have found that certain Negro organizations are determined to secure passage of anti-poll tax measures. If their first wedge towards the fulfillment of a dastardly equality program which Negro leaders have launched throughout the South and throughout the nation, that equality they must not and will not attain.
After his stirring appeal to the legislature, Senator Bilbo informs a small group of friends in confidential tones.
You know, gentlemen,
I found out that a prominent national official asked southern colleges and universities to open their doors to Negroes. You know what I told him? Well, I'll tell you what I told him. I told him, I said, Negroes are never getting into our universities. You Negro-loving Yankees can go straight.
As a member of the Senate of the United States, Theodore Bilbo is an honorable man. We do not intend to prove otherwise. Here is picture number two.
Hello. Senator Bilbo speaking.
Senator, this is Representative Marcantonio of New York speaking.
Yes, yes. What do you want?
Senator, I just got a letter from a lady who lives in my district. It seems that she wrote you that letter about your filibustering against the FEPC. Well, she says she stated her case fairly. And she also says that as a reply, you wrote her one of the dirtiest letters possible.
Well, yes, I think I did.
Well, Senator, she also says you addressed her with the greeting, "My dear Dago." Is that correct?
Of course that's correct. That's what I called her. She's a wop, ain't she?
That lady's Italian, Senator. Now, that's what you mean. I just thought you'd like to know that the lady has three brothers in the army in Europe. One of them has been killed in action already. You know, if you had a shred of decency in you, you'd apologize for that letter.
I'll never apologize. Why, she's getting off light. Now, listen, she really would have been scorched if I was mad.
Theodore Bilbo is an honorable man. We do not intend to prove otherwise. Here is picture number three. Scene, the chamber of the United States Senate. Time, the 30th of June, 1945. Senator Bilbo is filibustering against passage of the Fair Employment Practices Commission. And during his prolonged dissertation to the gentlemen of the Senate, the following occurred.
The senator from Mississippi may continue.
Thank you. Gentlemen,
I have been hearing much talk about the supposed bravery of our Negro soldiers. I have it on good authority and from some of the highest ranking generals in our army that our Negro troops overseas are an utter and abysmal failure. They're just no good. And as for giving them a vote, why, they'd only sell their vote to the highest bidder anyway. So why give it to them in the first place?
At the same moment, deep in the jungle of an embattled Pacific island, a Negro soldier pens a note back home to his family. And maybe this work's pretty hard, Margaret, but it's a job that you just have to do. It's been 3 days now, and no sleep. Their bombers are still paying us visits. And it still doesn't look like the war is going to be over soon. But we have to keep on. Just keep on. I know. I just know everything is going to turn out all right. But when we finally get back, the folks will realize what we've done. And I'll bet they look at us differently. You know, for the first time, they'll see that bullets can kill anybody. They'll see, black or white, when blood runs out on the ground, it's all the same color. That's what the Negro GI thought. But back in the chamber of the United States Senate, Theodore Bilbo thought differently.
I have it on good authority, and from some of the highest ranking generals in our army, that our Negro troops overseas are an utter and abysmal failure.
When Senator Bilbo made that statement, he was standing under the roof of the United States Senate. It is very safe in the United States Senate. A bomb hasn't fallen there for quite some time. You must understand, please. This is merely a portrait, an interesting portrait, of a duly elected representative of the American people. For you see, Theodore Bilbo is an honorable man, and we do not wish or intend to prove otherwise. Here is picture number 4. Though the senator has firm convictions on certain subjects, there is seen a mounting tide of sentiment equally firm, equally convinced that the senator errs. On the 10th of August, 1901. Senator Bilbo, it is the opinion of the Committee of Catholics for Human Rights that your conduct toward racial minorities is a chilling deterrent to worldwide belief that America is the symbol of democratic freedom and human rights. In a recent statement to the press, you attacked the Jewish people of the United States on the grounds that their race had damned and crucified Christ. You used this highly metaphysical argument to damn, vilify, besmirch, and otherwise persecute the Jewish people in America to further your own political ends. By lucid contrast, a few days after his attack on the Jews, Senator Bilbo is stricken suddenly with a strange ailment. He is put aboard a train and speeds northward for treatment. And is it not strange that the senator demands to be taken to the Mayo Clinic? Is it not strange when you consider that the Mayo Clinic was founded and operated by the Mayo Brothers, two members of the Jewish race professing the Jewish faith? But obviously, the senator is not loath to take advantage of the skill of the Jewish race. In the end, the senator's critical operation is a success, and in a few weeks he returns to the floor of the Senate with another plan for the American Negro.
Gentlemen, for the best interests of the nation and all concerned, I believe a colony for American Negroes should be established on the west coast of Africa, bordering the state of Monrovia. Because of the exigencies of the time, any Negro who is race conscious and smart should be ready and more than willing to settle down in such a colony in West Africa.
The very same day in the halls of the Senate, hallowed by the figures of men the likes of Lincoln and Jefferson, Theodore Bilbo, as a representative of the American people, had this to say.
I cannot vote for the appointment of Mrs. Franklin Roosevelt as delegate to the United Nations Organization for the United States. No. She is a woman who has professed friendship for the Negro elements in America. She has no place representing us abroad. Mr. President!
The chair recognizes the senator from Idaho.
Mr. President, I should like to congratulate the senator from Mississippi. He doesn't know it, but he just paid a splendid compliment to Mrs. Roosevelt by voting against her. Mr. President, gentlemen, please, I'd like to add one more note. A word of warning to our senator from the South. It isn't going to be long now, Senator, before the people of Mississippi see the light and knock you out of office on that part of your anatomy where your few brains are undoubtedly located.
You must understand, please, this was merely a portrait, an interesting portrait of a representative of the American people. For, after all, Senator Theodore Gilmore Bilbo is an honorable man. He is looked upon as such by the eyes of the law. He is an honorable man. We did not intend to prove otherwise.
The script for One Out of Seven is written by James Edward Moser. Gil Dowd is the producer, and music by Otto Clare at the Hammond Organ. The material used in tonight's program was taken from authoritative files and from dispatches by Associated Press and International News Service. Listen next week, same time, same station, for
One Out of Seven.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Ladies and gentlemen, the material and quotations used on the following program are taken from authentic news reports off the wires of Associated Press and International News Service. We present this material without editorial comment, since this station takes no official stand on any controversial question. We can, therefore, assume no responsibility for the attitude such statements reflect.
From San Francisco, the American Broadcasting Company presents One Out of Seven. Twenty-four hours make a day, 7 days make 1 week. And from these past 7 days, the editors here in our San Francisco newsroom have chosen the one story which they have judged most worthy of retelling. This is One Out of Seven.
We're not here to tell you what is good or what is evil, or to tell you what is right and what is not right. Being only man as you are, and thus being as moral or as immoral as you are, we refuse to mount the seat of judgment to pass sentence on those as guilty or as innocent as we claim ourselves to be. Now, we ask only that you pause, observe, and reflect. You have an intelligence of your own. Judge these actions for yourself. Last week, beneath the spacious skies of America the Beautiful, in the valleys of the amber grain and the fruited plain, and in the city towers looming high with the majesty of purple mountains, the people rejoiced and rededicated themselves in a nationwide Brotherhood Week. Lofty and ideal were the speeches of Brotherhood Week. Stirring and altruistic were the pledges and promises of Brotherhood Week. Godly and charitable were the aims of Brotherhood Week. But there are two families in San Francisco who are asking questions. Two families. City desk, Martin.
Say, boss, here's a pretty fair yarn on an eviction case. You want it?
Yeah, sure. What's it all about?
It seems there's a gentleman out in one of the residential districts who objects to the presence of a Filipino family in the neighborhood. There's also a Chinese family living nearby that, it doesn't appeal to him either.
Yeah, I'll go on.
Well, this gentleman says that the fact that these two families are living near him detracts from the value of his property.
Well, what's the matter? Does he have something against them?
Oh, no, nothing like that, boss. He just says that when he moved there, he was told that it was a neighborhood for white people. White people only. One of those restricted deals, you know? Well, now he's filing suit to have him evicted. Says he's losing money if they stay.
What about the two families? What have they got to say?
Well, they're plenty burned up about it. They're organizing, yeah, to fight the neighbor boosters club who's behind this gentleman. One of the members of the Filipino family is he's a Navy veteran, and he gave me a pretty good quote.
Well, go ahead. Let's have it.
Okay, boss. He says, "Is this what we've been fighting for? To have a bunch of stay-at-homes throw us out of our house?"
No, we're not here to tell you what is right and what is wrong. We wish merely to report that last week, the nation observed Brotherhood Week. In the churches and town halls throughout the country, the people rededicated themselves to the principles of tolerance and charity of the founding fathers. Columbia, Tennessee. A little more than 24 hours ago, the worst racial disorder in years, brought about by rumors of threatened lynching of Negroes, sweeps the city.
500 highway patrolmen raid a two-block area in the Negro section of the town where the non-white are carefully segregated. Armed with pistols and machine guns, the huge force of police search every Negro building in the area. Under the command of the State Director of Public Safety, the patrolmen fire withering blasts through the windows of the homes of the buildings. Groups of the Negroes huddled behind barricaded doors answer the machine gun fire with two or three scattered shots. More than 40 Negroes are arrested during the raid. The State Director of Public Safety describes the police exploit as a success. The origin of the bloody race riot is not clear, but it is reported that it started when a Negro woman and her son had a fight with a Navy veteran. The Negro couple were arrested, and it was then, according to one Negro, that the lynching rumor fired the town. Isn't that right?
Well, we heard that the white men were going to have a lynching party tonight, and, well, we didn't like that. We didn't want any killing to start again.
Again, renew our faith in Christian charity, in the principles of brotherhood that Christ himself handed down to us. And let us again resolve to act and live by the precept that we are all brothers, regardless of the color of our skin or the creed we profess, that we are all brothers in the house of the Lord.
We're not here to pass judgment on what is good and what is evil. We wish merely to report that last week, in a nationwide celebration marked by pledge and promise, the people observed the annual custom of Brotherhood Week. In a large eastern city, time, Thursday of last week, a Jewish newspaper editor and his family stand outside their burning home, huddled in firemen's capes against the cold of the early winter morning.
I'm from headquarters, Mr. Byrne. I heard about how the fire started in your house. Do you expect anybody or suspect anybody in particular?
Well, you know, I could not tell you the name of the man. I don't think I know him. But lately I've been receiving phone calls and a few letters, too, warning me about the editorials I've been writing in my district newspaper.
Well, what were those phone calls and letters all about, Mr. Byrne?
Well, they said I was trying to make our district into a ghetto and a Negro colony because I've been opposing a drive by the neighborhood club to keep out all the Jews, Negroes, Italians, Chinese. I think, you know, officer, you must have heard.
Yeah, I've heard, Mr. Byrne. I guess this is their answer, huh?
Yes. Tonight, there was another telephone call, and then about 1 o'clock, my wife and I were...
All right, George, light the torches and let them fly. We'll teach that Jew a lesson he won't forget. Come on, let's get out of here.
You see, it is not our place to pass sentence on the incident. For we're only men as moral or as immoral as you are, or as they are. We wish only to point out that last week was Brotherhood Week. Several appropriate speeches were made, and the people as a whole pledged themselves to tolerance and charity. The annual observance was acclaimed a success. Throughout the nation, priests and ministers... This is a story which probably will not receive the circulation it deserves. It concerns an incident which occurred last week at a southeastern Navy station here in the United States. And if my guess is right, it should give many a citizen cause to stop and ponder the worth and aims of our lately won victory. It all happened in one of the mess rooms at this particular Navy base where a group of officers...
Yeah,
Now, look, I don't care what anybody says. It's all the fault of the Jews. Now, look, I was in the Pacific, yeah. And all the time we're sweating it out over there, the big Jews back in the States are demanding that we defeat Germany first, while the men in the Pacific starve and sweat it out. Now, oh, no, no, you can't tell me a thing about those Jews, brother. I know exactly what they're like. You can have them.
I beg your pardon, Commander. I'm a Jew, and I think you're very mistaken in what you say.
Well, now listen here, Mr. Goldstein. You're a lieutenant. The Constitution may say that I have to serve in the same Navy with Jews, but there are no Navy regulations that say I have to eat at the same table with them.
Now, you other gentlemen will excuse me. Last week was Brotherhood Week. Last week was Brotherhood Week. Down through the rain, down through the wet, glistening street he came, his head bared, his frayed coat collar pulled tightly around his neck, a wide, ugly cut on his forehead, still bleeding, a monstrous bruise covering the side of his face. But strangely, I noticed he walked straight up, his head high. He came up and he stood beside me at the bus stop, and after a while he said,
You are wondering about me. Is that not so? This cut on my head and this bruise on my face?
Why, yes, as a matter of fact, I was wondering about...
Yeah, well...
Well, it looks like a pretty nasty cut, mister. Tell me, how'd you get it?
Well, it all happened so suddenly, I still cannot remember everything. I try. Tonight, like every Wednesday night, we have our meeting down in the hall on the west side of the city, you know?
Yeah, I know where that hall is.
Well, on Wednesdays, the people who are of my race, well, we all meet together to learn about our new country, to study the language, and to try to be better Americans.
Uh-huh.
But tonight, we have some visitors. They are a group of men, and they say, we cannot stay here because this town is for people of their race only. We say we will not go. And then there is a big fight. The men wreck our club room. They smash our furniture. And they fight with us. They tell us in loud voices, get out, stay out. But we fight back because we know the laws. The laws say these men are wrong. Oh, but the laws, they are not everything, are they?
Well, No, they're not, mister. You'll find that out.
Yes, we have found it out already. There are many things different about America than first I thought. Well, now, I must cross the street to the church. Would you like to come with me? I do not pray, you know, but I like to stand there in the church and say these things. It makes me feel better inside here after what has happened tonight.
Well, I crossed the street with him and I went into the church. We sat down in one of the pews far back in one of the dark corners of the church. A few candles flickered uncertainly up at the altar. And after a long moment, he turned to me and he said,
I do not hate these men who do such things. I am not bitter against them. Only I have so much pity for them. For is it not true? They are like frightened little children. Afraid, running around, looking for an enemy to fight. Anybody. But they do not see. The real enemy, he is inside them. Oh, they hate us. Yes, they hate us. But really, they do not know why. They would kill us. And then they would look down at our bodies and they would feel like little children who had just broken their toys. They see only the difference of color or language. And they become angry because we are not as they. Oh, it is so sad. And that is why I have so much pity for them. So blind. They are so blind. The sun is there waiting for them. shining warm and full over everybody, but their eyes are still closed, and all they can see is the darkness.
The script for One Out of Seven is written by James Edward Moser. Gil Dowd is the producer, and music is by Otto Clare at the Hammond Organ. All characters in tonight's performance were portrayed by Jack Webb. Listen next week, same time, same station, for One Out of Seven. Mark Jordan speaking. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Jack Webb and One Out of Seven from February 1946. If there are old-time radio shows you remember and would like to hear again, or if you'd just like to talk about old-time radio, drop me a note at Dan, D-A-N, at radiofun.info. In the Old-Time Radio Corner, I'm Dan Hughes.